Hey, this is James from TravelPunk.com, and I have a podcast this week. Last week we didn't have one, and this week we do, which we'll try to be back to the normal schedule. And this week, the main topic is all about how to preserve meat. I thought about just doing a food preservation episode, but realized that it would get really long, really quick, because I'm long-winded. So I decided just to tackle just meat. And even on that, I may go long. I may have to truncate some things. I don't know. But I like preserving meat, and I like meat, so I want to have meat. So a lot of these you will be able to do at home. Some of them you will probably have to buy because it's not worth investing in the equipment to make these techniques. But most of them will work, and most of them have been around for a very long time. Some of them have been around for a long time, and you will not want to do them. So before we get into the show, let's do some housekeeping, which we never do, especially on solo shows, but I'm trying to remember to do a few things, like giving out our phone number. We do indeed have a phone number you can call and ask questions of the Survival Punk podcast. And I forgot to give it out for so many episodes. I'm like, why aren't we getting any phone calls? Oh yeah, I don't give out the number anymore. So the number is 615-657-9104. 615-657-9104. And it, I believe at this point, if you call that number, one, it won't ring. To me anyway, it won't. It just goes straight to voicemail. It's a Google voicemail number set up just to record the phone calls that I can download via MP3 format. I want to set up a way on the website where you can just click and record there. So if you have a fancy smancy microphone like myself, you can just do it there. Because cell phones aren't always that good. I probably have had a call or two that was unusable just because it was like, you know, and I can't use that. But the point was, I'm pretty sure if you call that number now, it'll say, thanks for calling the Survival Punk podcast. Instead of previously when it was like just a funny voice. It was my normal voicemail, which is not professional at all. And people are like, did I call the right number? I'm like, yeah, I got to change that. So, if you've called and it's not the, well, this is the Survival Punk podcast, please leave your question after the beep, then let me know. But it should be that. I have at least one question, and I'm not going to answer it this week because this episode could be long. So, I'm going to wait and do that. If I have more questions, I'll do a whole Q&A episode. If I don't, then I'll try to knock it out small or do a whole episode on that question. Thanks, Matt, for calling in with your question. I've got a buttload of YouTube videos that I need to put out. I've recorded all of... I had a mountain of mail to open, and I opened it all, and I have a lot of videos, and then my computer with all the videos on them crashed, and it further backlogged me. So I have managed to save all those videos. I just need to get them on the new/old laptop that a friend of the show, Jay, gave me, and get those up. And that will be a pain. I'll get them up soon. I will have to spend like a whole day just tweaked out, just uploading YouTube videos. What other show news? There's the Survival Punk Army. I would love for you to join. We'll leave it at that this week. After missing a week of podcasts, I'm not going to be like, you should definitely join the Survival Punk Army. It's like, I would appreciate it. But life happens. So if you got it, join. If not, Enjoy the episode. No worries. That's it. That's it. Let's get into meat preservation. I'm already gabby and running long. Also, I will make a solid attempt this episode and all future episodes to not drink directly in front of the microphone. I had a listener complain that it's intolerable and he cannot stand it anymore. Okay, well, on some of these solo episodes, I record in the morning, right after waking up. And I like my coffee. So I will try to lean away and try not to make my sounds of enjoyment, which, while drinking coffee, is hard to do. All right, so I did a lot of research on meat preservation, and I tried to break it down to the main categories that one could preserve meat. I thought it would be just a few, and then I would talk about those methods. I came across a lot, and there may be more. It seems like some ancient cultures may have used honey to preserve meat, or sugaring, but I wasn't able to really dig deep into it and find out. When you look up, you know, preservation techniques, it tends to combine a bunch of willy-nilly and not really explain how that they were done. So I don't really know. I mean, I would assume maybe some ancient cultures may have just packed meat in vessels with honey over the top, because that will keep the oxygen out, and honey is antimicrobial, antibacterial, one of the two. But really didn't find a lot of evidence. I only spent about an hour and a half, 2 hours really, really digging into it. So, you know, for this episode, I've researched it a lot in the past. But if you know of an example of honeying for meat preservation, please let me know. Email jamesurvivalpunk.com or leave it in the comments on this episode. Or go to the Survival Punks Facebook group and let me know there. And I'll keep looking, but I really didn't come across anything. So the main ways preserving meat are, and they're not in any kind of order. So I originally wanted them like primitive to modern, but this is them. Salting, smoking, drying / dehydrating, larding / confit / there's a weird French word for it. Larding, we'll just say larding. Pressure canning, freezing, pickling, freeze drying, and fermenting. And I had trouble on a few of these, like finding reputable resources and not really times or anything. So, salting. Salting is probably the oldest form of meat preservation. You know, I'm sure that as soon as people found abundant sources of salt and found out that it inhibited decay of the meat, you know, it was used. So, it's, you know, probably caveman ancestors were salting meat, especially our, you know, ancestors, our forebears who were near the ocean and probably had more easy access to salt than some of the inland neighbors. Hopefully you didn't hear me take a drink of coffee. You know, and it's really not a complicated thing here. There are several many ways to use salt, either in a brine. You make a brine with salt and spices, especially antimicrobial ones like mustard seeds and whatnot. And a lot of times you would add a nitrate, like a salt pewter, to the brine, let it soak for several days, then let it hang and dry. And you get good penetration that way. This is good for hams and some other stuff. which tends to be more like in a pickling, and we'll talk about pickling in a bit. But salting, I mean, cover the meat with salt. Let it dehydrate. I mean, let it. Salt will pull out the moisture and inhibit bacterial growth. So, not really super duper hard there, guys. You know, and it was a staple for, you know, centuries before we had refrigeration. You know, salt. That's basically, you know, you would salt it and then pack it in barrels of salt or vessels of salt, whatever you had. Maybe dig a pit or something. You know, and I'm going to remind myself to include a video in the show notes to James Townsend and Sons. They did a video on salt-cured pork, which is nothing like the salt-cured pork that you can buy in stores nowadays. I mean, it's basically tiny end trimmings of bacon is what you can get in the stores, and that's not traditionally what salt-cured pork was. Some of the recipes I saw for salt-cured pork also included a sugar, brown sugar in this case. Some didn't, and that goes back to the sugaring, which, you know, is a preserving item. It, you know, is used more in jams and jellies than it is in meat preservation from what I found, but often in a pickling, brining situation, they would add sugar as well. I guess it's, you know, salt and sugar together would do a good job to inhibit bacterial growth. Jordan the cat, what are you screaming for? So, I will include a video. I've been somewhat obsessed with the James Townsend cooking videos recently. Which is weird. If you haven't seen them, and there'll be a link in the show notes, James Townsend and Sons on YouTube. They do 18th century recipe reenactment, and man, they do a good job. And they have some other preservation videos on there that you may find enjoyable. Jordan the cat is just over there howling away. He wants to go outside, and he's not. Let's see. Salt-cured pork. Let's see what we can get. Let's see if I can give you a quick recipe. To me, honestly, it just looked like they dredged it in salt. It's raw. You do have to cook it, and to prepare the salt pork, you do have to soak it in water several times to even make it edible. This is not going to be like, you know, pork jerky, basically. It's going to be something you're going to cook with, and it'll last for several months. On this, I hate that I have to give out this warning, but in the world we live in, I do. Warning, do all this at your own risk. You know, I'm going to, of course, tell you that after you make any and all of these meat preservation techniques at home, you're going to want to refrigerate it so you don't incur disaster. You know, even though our ancestors did this for a long time, most of them survived. You know, but if you don't give out the warning, some idiot's going to listen to the episode and they're going to make something ridiculous and then they're going to die. And their family is going to be like, he listened to that Survival Punk podcast and he made fermented jellyfish lungs and now he's dead. Well, don't make fermented jellyfish lungs, guys. I mean, unless that's a thing. Well, they even have lungs. Let's see. Oh, I hate. I was going to look up a recipe on salt curing pork, and it went to one of those websites that has every step on a separate page where you have to keep clicking next for 33 pages. And, I just leave those. I don't, if, if you're that dick bag website owner that splits everything onto a different page for SEO purposes, I don't think it's helping you. Because, especially on mobile, if you're on a cell phone and you go to a site and you have to keep clicking next on your cell phone, you're like, fuck this, I'm out of here. Anyway. Yeah, it looks like probably for salt-cured ham, salt-cured pork, you're going to want some brown sugar. You could probably do it without it, but why bother? There will be a video in the show notes. Watch that. He shows you how to do it. You know, bacon, salt-cured bacon, that lasts a while. Probably something good to learn how to do because bacon is yummy. Fishes. A lot of our things were made with salt. Salt, it needs to be in your preps. You can preserve a lot of foods just with the salt. There was a debate in the Roman Congress on, I don't think I kept the page open. Can people even live without salt? Something like that. I don't know. Nope. I didn't keep the link open. But it was funny. Whatever it was. Whatever. Sorry if the episode's a little discombobulated. It's just a weird morning for me so far. Salting. But yeah, the Romans, they would pack herring, I think. And I didn't look it up. They would pack a fish mackerel. They'd pack mackerel in barrels with salt and leave it to ferment for several months until it became a liquid, which became basically their ketchup. It was their condiment. They put this garum, which was fermented mackerel juice, uneviscerated. They left the fish whole so the stomach acid would help to ferment this fish juice and break it down into a black liquid that was basically pure liquid MSG, and they would put that on everything. It was mandatory. Like, it was their ketchup, the way that people use ketchup today and put it on everything. They would put garum on everything. And I've tried modern garum, and it is disgusting. But, you know, it's our modern palates are a bit different, and they're a bit, if we had to return to a more primitive world where we couldn't get these hyper-palatable foods and our modern tastes are accustomed to certain things, then, you know, we would probably think garum was delicious as well. All right, so a little hard to find dates and stuff, but I would say salting is probably one of the the longer methods of food preservation, of these meat preservations. You're going to get much, much longer time periods over salting than you will some other ones, especially what you can achieve at home. Smoking will be, you'll get a lot less time out of smoking than you will salting. If you double them up, salt and smoke, you know, more time. So, smoking, you know, just, you don't want to cook. Smoking works better for fish than it does for other foods, although it imparts a great flavor. So, I would not say that you want to just smoke chicken and then say that's good to go. It won't be. You'll probably die. Warning. Salting fish, though, or smoking fish, will give you at least it'll give you a couple weeks. Even if you don't use salt, you'll get a couple weeks with just smoked, you know, fish. And you don't want to use the smoke to cook the fish, per se. You don't want a hot smoke. You want to use a cold smoke and then choose that, the actual smoke itself, to preserve the food. You know, so you're going to want to build your fire away and then tunnel. There's my alarm clock. you know, move the smoke to it. There's a lot of ways, sort of off-grid DIY ways you can do this. Go to Pinterest and just look up DIY smokers and mind is blown. You'll have a good time there. You know, even things as easy as like, you know, digging like a Dakota fire pit and then putting your meat over the smoke exit hole. That should in theory work, and I want to give that a try. You're not trying to get heat. Like I said, you're just trying to get a gentle drying and the smoke. You know, so I'm not a big fan of smoking by itself as a preservation technique, because like I said, it doesn't last a super long time. But when you combine smoking with salt curing, you get like that 1-2 punch. Like you get that flavor and the, you know, the benefits of smoking that added it, and you get the delicious taste and long-term storage from that. So if you're going to smoke your fish for storage, I would then pack it in salt barrels. That's, you know, and then you'll have to do the washing process. And when you combine smoke and salt with pork, magic happens. Magic. Pork is like the ultimate meat to be preserved. Like, you know, it takes these techniques that, you know, are just trying to make things last and usually tend to ruin the flavor and destroy things. And it's like, no. I'm pork. Those things make me better. You know, fresh pork? You know, aged, smoked, salt-cured pork? You know, ham? Delicious. Salt-cured bacon? Delicious. Fresh pork chops? Like, one time, I had some friends/neighbors slaughter a hog and make barbecue that day. Like, it went from, like, slaughter to on the plate in just a few hours. And it was the worst barbecue I've ever eaten. Like, I mean, I ate like a rib or two and I'm like, I can't do this. Like, it was literally so bad. Like, I felt like I was going to throw up. Which made me very sad because it was pork, and I love pork. Drying and dehydrating. Let's move on. This is a method that I have a lot more experience with. I have dehydrated quite a lot of things. My dehydrator, you know, years ago, I used to just run that thing all the time. Mostly for a lot of veggies and stuff, but I have made quite a lot of jerky. And some other experiments. And in the drying, dehydrating process, we'll also throw things like biltong. Although it's not using a dehydrator, you can, you know, just dry things in the open air. You can build solar dehydrators. You can just hang things to dry. There's a lot of ways to dry things. That have been used historically that don't, you know, require you to have a modern dehydrator. You can even just moving air across stuff will dehydrate it. Maybe not fast enough, but, you know, it might work. And, you know, it's not hard. If you just want to get your feet wet in the jerky world, just put your oven on the lowest temperature, usually like warm, which is like 100 and something, and get you some. I mean, you can have your butcher if the store that you buy your meat from has meat slicing, or you can go out your way to go to a butcher. Get some thinly sliced meat, very lean. I don't really like lean meat per se, but jerky, the fat tends to be pretty disgusting. It just turns to a nasty, waxy, just, it's just gross on your teeth. I don't like it. You're going to want to use beef, venison. Don't use chicken or pork. I mean, I'm sure someone will comment and be like, well, I make chicken jerky all the time and I'm alive. Well, okay, good for you. I'm iffy about it, you know. I just am. If you'd have a better chance if you have chickens and you slaughter those chickens and then take them from slaughter to chicken jerky immediately, because you're not going to be dipping your chickens in a mass evisceration tube full of ammonia and salmonella, so, and poo. That would probably work better. If you're going to go and buy the cheapest, you know, the cheapest mass-produced chicken from your cheapest store that you can go to and try to jerky that, you know, it's your funeral. Positively. And once again, you're probably going to want to refrigerate this jerky after you make it. You know, there's a million recipes. Me and Serenity a couple months ago made some jerky, and I used some tamari, which is a gluten-free soy sauce, and just some like onion powder, garlic powder, salt, pepper, maybe a pinch of cayenne, and then some. I don't know if I think I prefer to put black pepper on after I've marinated it. I may put some in there, but I like big chunks of black pepper on my jerky. That's what I like. You know, you don't need to go super crazy with a marinade. I've made jerky before. It was just salt and pepper, basically, and it's good enough. It's not, you know, the most delicious thing in the universe, but it's good. You know, I enjoy sometimes having food that's not insane, not like over the top, like, you know, just salt and pepper, just good flavors without like having to be like ultra palatable, umami, smack you in the face, whatever. So yeah, just, you know, get you some like thin sliced meat, beef. Sometimes you could even find like the thin sliced meat for other dishes, like fajita strips or something in the store. Just use that, because I mean, it may be a deterrent to some people to have a slice of meat, because it can be a pain in the ass. If you freeze it for about an hour till it firms up a little bit, you can slice it at home with a nice sharp knife easier. But you know, just buy it and get it in there. Just get your feet in the game. So yeah, that's, and so yeah, well, or make biltong. Biltong is delicious. It's like a South African jerky that's traditionally just hung in the shade outside. Jordan the cat wanted to get in my lap, but now he wants to get out. He's just walking around being weird today, like all cats are. Do not jump into my coffee. So I heard about biltong many, many years ago on the Survival Podcast. And I made it. And it was delicious. Weird. This is his recipe. I'm going to read jacketsurvivalpodcast.com. I will try to find a link to his YouTube video where he makes it and you can watch him make it. For this, you're going to want beef or venison once again, and unlike jerky, you're not going to want the thinnest like strips possible. You're going to want like 1 inch wide by like 1 inch deep by like 6 inch long strips. So these are like basically little steaks, cut with the grain if the meat is long enough. You'll have a better end product, tender, than you will if not. What I did was I got some apple cider vinegar and I bought a spray bottle, and I just spritzed it all around on all sides. You don't want it like swimming in apple cider vinegar, but you want it coated in apple cider vinegar. And for me, a spray bottle just works the best. You can cover it good without like having it like just sit in a pool of apple cider vinegar. And you can use any vinegar. Apple cider vinegar is just good though, and I like it. So sprinkle with coarse salt. Any non-iodized salt will do. Sea salt. I prefer kosher salt. If you want to like waste a bunch of money, you can use pink Himalayan salt. I use that for food. Maybe not so much for, making biltong though. But it may taste good. I don't know. Don't go crazy with the salt on the stage. You just kind of want to sprinkle it. But you don't think like a pretzel. Like those big pretzels you get that has like, those nuggets of salt on it. It's not coated in salt, but it has salt on it. So, calm down a little bit. Black pepper. That's traditional. Apparently, black pepper is a deterrent to flies, which is why it was used on the South African biltong, because it was hung outside. And coriander. You got to have coriander make traditional biltong. So it's one of those weird spices. You usually don't tend to have it. I still have coriander left from making biltong, and I've not used it for anything else ever. It's biltong seasoning for me. Let's see, take all that, put it in the fridge, come back the next day. That's it. I believe that's it. You just hang it up after that. Been in the fridge overnight, find a nice shady place to hang. I, you know what, when I did it, I just hung it in my room. Like I found 2 points, run a string, take paper clips. Because they'll go across, like, I use fishing line. Yeah, I just use fishing line. I just strung up fishing line, used paper clips, and just shoved it through the meat and hung it to dry for 6 days. 6, 7 days, something like that. And then they'd eat it. I packaged mine in the fridge because this sort of dry pickling method here will continue. And if you eat it, after that 6 days, it's so tender and juicy, and it's not like jerky at all. But I had some that I tried later that I just wrapped in a cloth and set aside for preps, and it got pretty crispy. So it's best to leave it. You get the best flavor from leaving it in the fridge and not letting it continue to dry out. And you don't want to like, so if you store this for your preps, you kind of want to let it to breathe. So wrapping it in a cloth or something so that it doesn't trap moisture and go bad. And that's, delicious. And I've seen random reports. Once again, your mileage may vary. Take this as a disclaimer. Someone like had a piece left over and they like pulled it out of their pack like years later, like decades later. It was still good. So biltong, and as few ingredients as this is, you could make that in a disaster scenario. If you have like a game deer you caught. You can biltong that. Yes, I said put it in the refrigerator to let it marinate. Just put it in a nice, cool place and then come back tomorrow and then hang it up. The South Africans, when they were making this, traditionally, they weren't putting it in their ancient refrigerator. So, it's, ignore that. What else do we got? So much more stuff. Larding. Larding is an interesting one here. And I've heard different things. I've heard it called different things several ways. I'm just condensing all of the different methods, confit, the other things, fat cap, all that. I'm just going to call it larding, because that's basically you're using lard. You're using some sort of fat to preserve the meat. And that's because fat will provide a barrier to prevent bacteria and oxygen from getting to your food to spoil it. This is a... When first I heard about larding, I was like, that can't possibly work. But it worked for a long time. So, you know, you can't argue with that. So it, and it seems weird. Basically, you use a fat to prevent oxygen and bacteria from getting your food. On the simplest, I mean, you would, like, there was a Jas Townsend's video on making potted meat. Not just the stuff you see in tin cans at the store, but, you know, real potted meat. And I can't remember what the meat was, but basically they slow cooked it for forever until it just fell apart. You know, and then they shredded it, packed it in these little jars, and then rendered some fat, brought the meat back up to temperature so that it was steaming hot. They used ghee, clarified butter. And after it was, like, you know, brought back up to 200 some degrees, obviously killing all bacteria that may have formed after the time where they cooked it and shredded it. And then they poured this melted clarified butter on top of it and then sort of kept pouring it so that it worked its way through all of the meat and then formed a cap on the top of just ghee, just clarified butter, which kept anything from getting in there afterwards. And, you know, they just sort of used it like potted meat. You know, they just dug it out with a knife when they were ready to eat it and spread it on crackers or bread or whatever they want to do with it. I'm sure you could cook with it. You could, you know, do some other stuff with it. I mean, obviously, you're not going to make the most delicious dishes ever because it is already cooked meat, so you're just going to reheat it if you do. But maybe a quick stew or something with it. But I wouldn't want to keep cooking with it because just as cooked as it is, you're not going to make magic with it. This tends to be better from what I saw by putting them in multiple small containers. If the container is going to be smaller than what you're going to use all of at a time, you've ruined it. It's like when you open a package of like dehydrated stuff and it says, you know, shelf life reduced once you open it. Same thing with this. So you're going to want to get jars and containers small enough to use them all at once. You know, and little mason jars would be good for this. And that's basically it. While researching that, I did come across that it was also used for, like, bone broth. So, like, you leave all the fat in your bone broth when you're making it, instead of skimming it off, put it in these, like, put it in, like, a mason jar or whatever you have, little jars. And when it cools, the fat, of course, goes to the top and forms this cap. That'll be fine, you know. I mean, air quotations, it'll be fine. Your mileage may vary, whatever. So yeah, that cap of fat that floats to the top will seal it in, keep anything from getting in there. And if you put it in the jar when it's hot enough and there's enough fat, then, you know, you've killed all the bacteria in there. So that's interesting, and I had to write that down so that I remember to tell you guys about it. So, same thing for soups. Soups with a lot of fat in it, you put them in a container, the fat cap will form, and that'll last for a while. I didn't really come across any times for this, so I don't know how long it'll last. In a shit hit the fan scenario, you know, I don't even want to make a guess, to be honest. A couple weeks. I wouldn't take this fat cap soups and bone broth method, you know, for months or years. I would try to consume this within a few weeks. But If you know different, let me know. pressure canning. Pressure canning may be one of the most modern and safest methods of this. If you have the materials, you can indeed do this shit hit the fan off-grid scenario. I saw some people that rigged an outdoor cooktop wood burning that regulated the heat fairly well using metal sheeting so that it didn't get too hot, didn't get too cold, and they can keep the temperature in that temperature range to use their pressure canner on a wood-fired outdoor oven setup they did. You know, and that's the thing. You want that constant temperature. And to be honest, I'd much rather pressure can not in my house. I'd rather have like an outdoor kitchen. I was about to say outside, maybe there's a... but the pressure canner always sounds like it wants to explode. And it does contain a lot of pressure. But, you know, get a good quality pressure canner. I've got a giant Presto. And follow the instructions for that. You know, the temperatures and whatnot you need for canning. I wouldn't willy-nilly it. I would keep that instruction manual and follow the rules on that. And, you know, before I've pressure canned a ton of ground beef because it's kind of hard to find canned ground beef. And it's a little on the expensive side compared to what you can buy and do yourself. So, same thing with, I know some lady that writes for Backwoods Magazine, Backwoodsman, Backwood Home, one of those. She'll go buy turkeys after they go on sale, you know, after Thanksgiving and just pressure can a bunch of turkey meat. Some of the stuff you need to cook beforehand, some of the stuff you do not need to cook beforehand. My ground beef, I cooked it and then packed it with water. Is following the directions. You know, there was a recipe for canned ground beef, and I followed it, and it worked. You're not gonna make hamburgers out of this. And there, by God, you may be able to find a recipe to make basically canned hamburgers, which have got to be better than the commercial canned hamburgers that are disgusting looking. You know, if you look, you might find it. I didn't, you know. I followed a recipe for canned ground beef. It is good for a lot of, like, long cook things. I made chili with mine. Delicious, you know. You can make, you know, tacos out of it, that sort of things. You're not going to ever remake it into, like, I don't think it would make a good meatloaf. Could be wrong. Because then again, you're cooking it for a long period of time, and I don't know if it'll be right. You can give it a try, find out. I don't know. But yeah, ground beef. Is definitely good for anything like that. Taco meat, spaghetti probably, stuff like that, that you just need ground beef to add into it. And usually the recipe calls for brown. If you do hamburger helper, ground, you know, this would work great for that. If you do, I don't know. I haven't eaten hamburger helper in years. Freezing. You know, this is, while the grid is up, it's probably the easiest method. Freeze you some meat, 6 months to a year, generally the time, you know, the rule of thumb. And it works, you know, and that needs to be sort of the first line of what you eat when the grid goes down. But while it's up, you know, take advantage of it, you know, get a deep freezer, freeze some food, get, you know, it's easy and it's fast and it's cheap. So do it. I'm not going to go along on that. It's not really, it's not complicated. If you buy a bunch of stuff to freeze, it's, don't put all of your new meat to be froze in the freezer at one time. All that not frozen meat will tend to raise the temperature of the freezer. You know, I've heard that. So try not to put it all in there at once. Try to add a little bit at a time. You know, copy freezing, if you will. What are we doing on time? Is this going to be a two-part episode itself, I think. Which maybe will be good because I can dig deeper on some of these weird esoteric methods that I came across. Or maybe I'll try to fix... Yeah, I think I'm going to try to... I will finish up real quick, guys. Pickling meat. There are recipes for pickled meat. I'm sure if you've... From the South, you've seen our illustrious jars of pickled pig's feet. I don't think that's a northern thing. I believe it's just down south. If you go on the aisle that has like canned meat and stuff at pretty much any grocery store here in the South and some gas stations, you will find pig's feet stuffed in jars. I've never had, I think my granddad used to like them. So as a child, I may have eaten them. As an adult, I've never had a pickled pig's foot. But, you know, the shit hits the fan. Maybe I'll start eating pickled pig's foot. And I think someone eats pickled chicken feet. I don't know. It's weird. But there are different pickled meats. I tried doing some research and I found mention of pickled meat, but I didn't really find a whole lot. Like, corned beef, by the way, is a pickled meat and it is delicious. Could not find a good indication of how long it lasts after you pickle it. I mean, so that needs to be dug into deeper, but you know, I would gladly eat corned beef and this shit hit the fan. Yeah, give me that. You know, just I saw some generic recipes for like pickled pork. That's, you know, sort of a basic pickling brine that you cure it in, and you have pickled meat. A strong vinegar solution, acidity below, I believe, 4.5, inhibits the growth of bacteria. So it was used a lot. There's just not a lot of, I couldn't find a lot of information on it. I just couldn't. And the Vikings apparently did some pickling herring and stuff. The Vikings make a pickled sausage using sour whey. Also, traditionally, the Vikings would include rye in their sausages, which just, when it was in the presence of moisture, just soured. So, that was that. So, you guys, if you know something, drop me a line so I can see. Just not a lot of good information on it. But, you know, if you're in a pickle, try pickling your meat, you know. Next up is fermented. Last up is fermented. No. Next up is freeze drying. Freeze drying is out of bounds for most people. A commercial freeze drying machine to get it home is like $30,000. So, and I've seen some sort of DIY freeze drying, pulling a vacuum on your stuff while super cold, and it all seems sort of janky and pseudosciencey. Maybe it'll work, maybe not. I don't want to trust my long-term storage on something that like looks like looks like a stoner whipped together to get high. For me, freeze dried is not something you're going to do at home, but is a method that you're going to buy. I have, you know, quite a few long-term storage number 10 cans of freeze-dried meats and veggies and fruits and stuff. That's where freeze-dried belongs in your prepping. Freeze-dried meats have an incredibly long shelf life, verifiable, probably longer than... technically, maybe the biltong lasts as long. I think I've read 25-year-old biltong being eaten. Most all the, you know, freeze-dried meats have a 25-year shelf life. So buy freeze-dried meats. I mean, that, you know, it's a guaranteed prep. You know that it'll be good. So some of these other methods you can do in the short term, but you know you've got that guaranteed safe meat. So that needs to be part of your thing. I think I've talked in the past about how I'm a big fan of the Thrive Life Q program, which is you set a budget, you pick things you want, and then it just sends it to you monthly and takes the money out. So generally tend to find that if the money just comes out, people just make do. I mean, you know, it's like if you get a raise, you never really notice that raise. You know, you just automatically start spending more. If you have something that comes out like a bill, it just comes out, and you know, it takes that ability for you to forget and not do it out of it. And it makes it easy. So I'm a fan of that. I'm not affiliated. There's no link to go click and buy and I make monies or whatever. I just personally like the Q program. So I like that ease and convenience, and it just shows up and then you just throw your food preps and you're good to go. So that's what I like. Because I'm lazy sometimes. I mean, a lot of times. It's a weird part of my alcoholism, and if you don't know, I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I went to Alcoholics Anonymous one time. Actually, I went a lot, and a guy said something one time that was like, damn, that's me. He's like, I only got two switches, off and extreme. That's me. You know, I'm either just completely just lazy, just completely, you know, off. I'm just completely off. Or it's extreme, you know. There's no moderation with me. You know, like, I went from being a couch potato, you know, before, to, you know, the year that I did CrossFit, you know. That's not just like, oh, I'm just going to go, you know, lift some moderate weights and do this and this and this. You know, I'm going to CrossFit every day, you know. Good results, though, but... you know, and then afterwards, off, on, off, you know, or off, extreme, you know. I'm either whole hog on the podcast, you know, busting my ass, you know, waking up hours early, staying up hours late, busting ass on it, or it's like, oh, there's not a podcast this week, guys. I can't think and focus, and I've heard that when they're like, signs that you might be a genius, like, sometimes you're just lazy. So maybe I'm blaming that on my geniusosity. But the last method, before I go off on a super tangent, and we never get this show done with, and it will be a one-parter. Well, no, it's still going to be a two-parter, but it won't be three or four-parter, is fermentation. There are fermented meats. Actually, there are more fermented meats than I thought when I started doing research for this episode. I thought fermented meats were just weird things, like I'm going to talk about. But a lot of salamis and some sausages tend to be fermented. So there are some neat fermented meats in the world. You know, and, you know, some, like I said, are, you know, vinegar or sour whey to make these pickled sausages and pickled meats like that. You know, and going into like a salami thing, that would be better described as like a YouTube video. shown. So I'll try to find a salami making. I know Morton's Tender Quick is a miracle, and it's worth having in your preps. There is, I love summer sausage, guys. And there's a, and I keep meaning to make it, there's a super easy summer sausage recipe I saw on Facebook that was like 5 pounds of meat, some amount of Tender Quick, something, 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 roll it in a tube, like use plastic wrap to roll it, let it sit for a while, and then you cook it on a super low temperature for a long time, and then you make summer sausage. And summer sausage with the Tender Quick in it, it's going to have some kind of a shelf life, even though it's going to say refrigerate it. I've taken salamis and summer sausages on long camping trips and just basically gnawed on them. You know, like, I tried to eat them within 2 days. You know, you open a summer sausage and you eat like half one day and half the next day. Didn't have any problems. Didn't, like, you know, pee out my ass or anything. So there are some, you know, fairly reputable fermented meats. And then we get in some weird things. Like, there are some Korean and some other, like, Asian countries that do some weird fermented fishes. A lot of them are just, like, open air. There was one that I read that to make this fermented fish thing, that they would pack it in compost during the colder months or the colder regions and then just, like, let it be in the open air in the hotter regions. Couldn't really find a lot of details on that. I don't know if they did anything to it. Like, they just let it sit out in the sun or the compost, for that matter, until it was done, air quotes. I don't know. The one that I thought about while researching this, though, was I knew that the Icelandic people made a fermented shark meat traditionally, and they still do. And I was like, oh, I got to talk about that. It's, I'm gonna just say the name. It's Hákarl, and I don't speak Icelandic. That's probably wrong. It's H-A with an accent over the A, K-A-R-L. And because it looks so weird, I just think Japanese, so I said Hákarl. I don't know how the Icelandic people say it, but it was invented by the Icelandic and the Vikings, that the meat of the Greenland shark is poisonous when fresh due to the high content of urea and trimethylamine oxide, but may be consumed after being processed. The method is by gutting and beheading the Greenland or sleeper shark and placing it in a shallow hole dug in gravelly sand, with the now cleaned cavity resting on a small mound of sand. The shark is then covered with sand and gravel, and stones are placed on top of the sand in order to press the shark. In this way, the fluids are pressed out of the body. The shark ferments in this fashion for 6 to 12 weeks, depending on the season. Following this curing period, the shark is then cut into strips and hung to dry for several months. During this drying period, a brown crust will develop, which is removed prior to cutting the shark into small pieces and serving. I've seen people on various, like, food channel shows and stuff eat this. They usually cut it into fairly small little squares, and it's washed down with a equally weird booze, some super strong crazy fermented liquor. I don't remember what it was, but it was also as weird as this is. And I've heard several people describe this as the most disgusting thing they've ever eaten, so it's almost like a rite of passage. Maybe the Vikings actually enjoyed this taste. Like I said, our modern palates are a lot different. So maybe they actually did enjoy this and it wasn't like a disgusting rite of passage. So, you know, up north, Jeff Radke, why don't you make some fermented fresh land shark and send me a cube to throw up and eat? I'll do a YouTube video eating this shark. So yeah, there, like I said, the fermentation process can go several ways. There are probably a lot of unrecorded methods that was done in history that worked or didn't work because their inventor died while eating them. So some of these still survive the, you know, the modern food safety blitz is pushing some of these older methods out, and finding them is a bit harder. While researching this, I came across a lot of like food safety blogs, and I'm just like, get out of here, government. I don't want to know your shit. To be honest, I've had some troubles with Google recently, which is sad because I love Google, but I think they're doing something to the search algorithm, and it's going to piss me off if I find out I'm accurate. And I'm not going to mention it because I'm going to ask some people in the Survival Punks Facebook group very vaguely to see if see what their feelings are. I got a feeling Google's doing something shady, and it'll so piss me off, and I'll switch to a new search engine if they're doing it. But I've noticed this over the past couple weeks and months of Googling stuff that it seems like something's happening. So, and I don't like it. But anyway, that is how to preserve meat through several methods, many of them being ancient ones that various forms of reliability. So I would say the number one takeaway for this episode, you probably need more salt in your preps. Tender Quick would probably be a good addition too. Trying some of these methods now while the grid is up would be a good idea. It would behoove you. I love that word. It would behoove you to try these preservation methods while you can put them in the fridge and get better at them and develop the flavors to make a good thing. Like your first batch of jerky might suck. You know, unless you follow a super tried and true recipe and everything falls into line, it may suck. You know, and then sometimes you'll go off experimenting and try to do your own thing and it'll suck. Like, you'll try to be like, I think I've invented the newest, greatest, like, jerky marinade, and it might suck. And, you know, you gotta be okay with that. Stuff is cheap now and the grid is available. It's a good time to experiment, as opposed to when it's not. When you don't have meat or foods to be experimenting with. So it's good to try it now. And, you know, like I said, freeze-dried meats are readily available now. So there's no point not to stockpile them now while you can. Maybe you don't want to go ferment shark, though, but everything else should be good, and you should be trying it. And with that, DIY to eat fermented shark meat, you guys.